This is Kathleen McFerrin. We're on our third class of this integrating NVC teleclass through the NVC Academy. I'm really enjoying this whole exploration that we've been doing. I would love to hear a check-in from all of you to find out if there's any insights or frustrations, you know, you've experienced in really integrating this NVC consciousness into your daily life.
I'm teaching a communication skills class that I'm hoping is somewhat unique and different from any other class that people have taught before, and I'm getting such a lot of value out of this telecourse. It's contributing to how I plan for that class and what I can share in that class. I'm hoping they'll both feed on each other.
Yeah, oh, great. So last week we were talking about language, right? First week was consciousness, and last week was language. Did you have anything that you picked up and you wanted to put in your two cents about?
I love everything that you guys talked about. What occurred to me is that when people look at the model, the four components model and observations, feelings, needs, requests, they look at it and go, I couldn't do that. How am I going to find time to learn this whole new way of speaking? And I really appreciated the fact that you said that, you know, a lot of that's internal, a lot of that's inner things, that this is how we start to think rather than necessarily stringing the words together. When I saw this, I felt this, and that, you know, so I need this, and I'm requesting this. And so it doesn't always come out that way when you say it, but that's what starts happening in your head. And I really, really liked that. And that's kind of what, actually, it was one of my students who said this, I don't have time for this, you know, in my busy life, I don't have time to learn to talk this way. And I said, even if it's just one little bit of awareness that changes for you or that's new for you, it'll make a huge difference, and then the language will flow naturally. So I'm particularly pleased that you said that. One thing that I thought of was that we hear a lot about what NVC isn't, and you know, the dominator paradigm and the language that comes up around that. So a lot of criticism, a lot of blame, a lot of judgment, evaluation, moralistic judgments and things like that. So we find out a lot about what NVC language isn't. But it would be so great to have a way to be able to identify what NVC language or what life-serving language or values-based language is when we hear it just out in the world, to be able to say, that was a life-serving statement because of X, Y, and Z. And then also the other thing that came up with for me was, how do we learn to translate what we hear more effectively? I think that would be a valuable skill for people to have. When you hear things that are jackal-type statements, going beyond just identifying it, oh, that's a jackal statement, how do we translate that more smoothly so that we can stay connected?
Yeah, well, I'm appreciating all of these points here, partly because it's so helpful for me to hear feedback that's in very concise pieces, so that it helps me track and share in a way that's concise. And that last piece you mentioned, how do we learn to translate what we hear, is that was at the core of my learning NVC. I would take newspapers, I would translate what I heard on the radio, I would just say, what's the need? What's the need? What's the need? What's the need? Over and over until I built that kind of internal fluency. And I like the idea the model is the internal process. I like that. I think I need to shift my basics around even more than I have to really capture that. This is the thought process, and then let the language flow.
I'm liking that, too. And now, okay, how do we do this? You know, how do we do it for ourselves and for the people that we share it with?
You know, I can insert a little idea. The practice group in Philadelphia, they're actually taking scenes from well-known movies and breaking them down into NVC and what would have happened in these famous arguments or conflicts if NVC had been utilized.
Well, that's a great idea. That would be fun.
I also just really appreciated some of the points that Angana touched on, and I love the movie idea. I love the idea that you just mentioned, Kathleen. I do the same thing, newspapers, articles, just everything I hear, wondering what the needs are mainly. I have more trouble with needs than feelings now. At first, I had to have the sheets, the feelings, and the needs on the refrigerator, and I referred to them constantly. And after a while, I got more conversant with the feelings, but I'm still really working on needs. Just trying to translate everything that comes by has been really helpful for me. So I guess I really don't have much else to say.
Well, Mary Kate, I'm wondering if you could just say a little bit more about the homework of, did you take a story and then tell it from two different points of view, from the point of view of needs not being met and needs met?
I took a story, and I actually tried it out with both last week's assignment and the new one you posted for this week.
Okay. I'm curious what it was like for you.
It was good. It was really fascinating because I realized this story that I'm telling myself is really a thought process. And I can get into feelings and needs, but when I tried to imagine what the feelings and needs on the other side were, I mean, mine were not too hard to figure out. I'm willing to share the story when it's time. But I did get stuck there. You know, I keep coming back to an idea, and I never quite got out of the idea stage of it, the thought part of it. Couldn't quite get around the thinking.
Okay. That might be really helpful going into this week when we are focused on the whole thinking, thought aspect of life and how that's a piece of NVC and yet how NVC approaches that. So I appreciate just what you said, is that you notice that the story you keep telling yourself is a thought, but your feelings arise from that, from how you're perceiving it.
Exactly.
So, and I often like to say our feelings arise from whether or not we perceive our needs being met, not our feelings arise from whether or not our needs are being met. Because how we're perceiving it, sometimes our needs are being met in ways that we don't even notice. But if I'm perceiving that I have an unmet need, I'm going to have a thought in relation, a feeling in, that comes up in relation to that. And if I'm perceiving that my need is being met and the situation might be identical, then I'll have a different set of feelings that come up. So we can hold that thought as well as we're talking about thoughts today.
It's been a big week for me. I'll do my best. I'm not feeling very well today, so if I end up not staying focused, that's just because I'm not. The homework exercise on my own, inside my own head, I found challenging. It was really hard within my own head to imagine me saying different things in my story, and even harder to imagine what might come back if I said things, communicated things differently. So I worked with my teacher in Philadelphia over the phone. I had a more successful time with someone to work with instead of just in my own head. And we worked with two different situations, real situations that I had real stories in my head about. And I really got a sense in both of them. The first one was the one that we worked on with that counselor. I don't really know that person, but I could really sense how things could have gone differently based on any number of different types of responses from me. And then in one with a friend of mine, just a deeply difficult situation after a 20-year friendship, I just really was having a hard time seeing what their needs were in the situation. It just seemed as if they were being obstinate and belittling and so on and so forth. And so Jason was really able to help me see what the needs were from the other side and how my understanding of those needs could change my communication and shift the responses. But I'm not yet accomplished enough to do that all in my own head.
So let me check in. Are you thinking that that's a goal?
I'm thinking that it's part of the transformation, part of the process, that eventually it becomes natural in my mind to be able to hold. I think one of the things that I realized is how focused I seem to be on a number of things. One, getting in touch with my own needs, since that's such a brand new concept and seems to require a whole lot of energy. And then the how do I communicate them, and getting stuck in my head about the rules of, A, how to communicate, but where I really was hung up and didn't know was how much energy I was expending on the rules of listening properly instead of just listening. It's like, when am I supposed to talk and what am I supposed to say, and how do these people make it sound so natural when they say, so it sounds like you fill in the blank, and for me it never comes out, it's just total silence. And having so much going on in my head about how to do it right, then I'm missing it all. I think I became aware this week of just how truly a transformation needs to happen. It's not my head and it's not rules. This is an actual transformation of how I function.
I appreciate that clarity. I've done it frequently to think there's a certain goal. I need to be at a place. And I find that my goal is often thinking that I'm independent and don't need people because I can do it myself, and that's my goal. When I realize that the more skilled I get at being able to process it myself, I'm also aware of the deeper level of richness and ability that other people have to get me even to a deeper place by doing it with them. So it's a lovely interdependent model once again that pops up.
It is. That seems to me what will end up being the most important piece of this. That concept of that interdependence, that interconnectedness, it is so easy to think I can do it myself, and I've spent a whole life doing it myself. And recognizing the value, the beauty. I know Jason in Philadelphia had talked about this need in him, this desire to truly connect with people. And he said that a number of months ago, and I really did not have a connection to what he was saying because that has not been my experience. I have not had this deep need and desire to truly connect with people. It's sort of just more of a get through the day and you have your friends and you nod and say hello and have nice conversations, but it's not connected. And so that recognition of the value that's inherent in that kind of connection and that kind of longing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that. I wanted to explore the thinking element today, and so I did find this kind of fun poem by Robert Bly. It's called Things to Think. We'll be exploring, you know, if our thinking puts us in prisons or if our thinking is really a gateway to greater resources. So Things to Think by Robert Bly. Think in ways you've never thought before. If the phone rings, think of it as carrying a message larger than anything you've ever heard, vaster than 100 lines of Yeats. Think that someone may bring a bear to your door, maybe wounded and deranged. Or think that a moose has risen out of the lake and he's carrying on his antlers a child of your own whom you've never seen. When someone knocks on the door, think that he's about to give you something large, tell you you're forgiven, or that it's not necessary to work all the time, or that it's been decided that if you lie down, no one will die. I just like Bly's exploration on thinking out of the box. So today we get to focus on the NVC element of thinking. In NVC, we take a look at the core beliefs that we hold about the world and the key role that thoughts play in our reactions and our responses and the outcomes of the assumptions and frameworks that create our paradigms. So our thoughts shape our perceptions about whether or not we think that our needs are being met or threatened. And our feelings arise in conjunction with that perception, as we talked about earlier. The thoughts filter the way that we look at the world. And anger is a great example of how this works. So I've been working inside the Washington State Prisons for about 3 years with the Freedom Project, and one of my favorite workshops to do in there is an anger workshop. We call it Making Friends with Anger because there's no shortage of material, and it's really an area of extreme importance. It's literally life or death for many of them. Learning to transform anger and acting from a consciousness of needs may be the thing that saves them from landing back in the prison once they're out, or it may be what guards them against harm that they may commit to themselves or others in the midst of rage while they're inside. In the NVC process, anger is a mix of natural emotions and toxic thoughts. So reacting to a stimulus with the thoughts of someone's wrongness or interpretations of what others are doing to you, or the shoulds or should nots, creates the rage. So the observation versus evaluation is the key differentiation in NVC that allows us to get to our thoughts. And I'm just starting to really appreciate that observation versus evaluation as a way to really sort through. When we slow down enough just to see the thoughts clearly and to look at the underlying feelings and needs, then the anger changes into other emotions and the requests can just rise naturally. When working with people around their core thoughts that frame the way that they see the world, I often come across thoughts of scarcity, thoughts such as, there's not enough to go around, or thoughts of self-worthlessness, I'm not enough, I need to prove my worth, I'm a detriment to others. Or I find thoughts that the world is not safe, or thoughts that I'm powerless. I found it eye-opening to look at my own core beliefs and to watch how they shape my actions in the world. One belief that I found I operate from is that I need to prove my worth, so that I find myself acting in ways that are perhaps less authentic than I'd like them to be. They're a little less honest. So when I consider shifts in thinking that may be more congruent with my values, I find that I make different choices that come from a place of trust and openness. This process, I believe, can be useful in organizations to identify and choose the kind of worldview or paradigm out of which the individuals are operating, and to create shifts in the whole system that can support paradigms that are in line with chosen values. It's certainly something I operate out of with individual transformation. So I'd just love to hear what comes up for you around what I just said.
Well, what you said at the end there really caught my attention. If my thinking is in alignment with my values, I make different choices. And that's something that I'm really starting to notice in myself the deeper I get into this transformation, is if I can stop and if I can differentiate, I really make different choices, profoundly different choices. Mm-hmm. Whereas a year ago, 6 months ago, maybe a week ago, the choice that I made would seemingly be the only choice, the righteous choice, the rightful choice, and now I would make an entirely different choice.
Mm. Based on a different kind of awareness and that you've developed?
Yeah.
I really, really liked the idea of the natural aggression and toxic thought. I love the idea of toxic thought affecting our reactions.
Yeah, natural emotion mixed with a toxic thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is it that you like about that?
It's a very vivid image that made a lot of sense to me when thinking about reactions. And the whole thing about the stories we tell ourselves and the assumptions we make and all these things, and bundling them up into that really nice, neat little expression, toxic thought. Is it real? Is it? What is that, and how it affects our choices? It says a lot. In two words, there's a lot of meaning and a lot of imagery that comes up around that idea.
Mm. And as you were saying that, I was remembering your check-in about really what does NVC look like? What is it? And so wanting to be specific, toxic, the toxic thought that I'm talking about is the jackal language, pretty much the Amtssprache, that should, mm-hmm. shouldn't, right, wrong, somebody's good, somebody's bad, that's the specific kind of toxic thought that gets mixed up with the natural emotion. And I remember the relief I had when I heard Marshall say that, because I wasn't overwhelmed with, oh, okay, here's yet another huge, gigantic shift I have to make. No, it's natural. There's a natural piece of this, and if I can just separate out the piece, the toxic thought piece, from the rest of it, then I can be present and be able to transform and be connected to the needs.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I don't remember what I saw. It was probably a TV argument or something, but something recently just made me think about, in a moment, in some passionate moment that triggers you, it's really hard to separate out the toxic thought in the moment.
Mm-hmm. I had that experience this weekend. It's pretty rare for me to get triggered to anger, and I did this week, and I just got this rage that came up, and my first thought was, oh man, when's the next prison workshop that I can be a part of? But, and then I realized, oh yeah, I facilitate those, so I've got the skills. But it was really nice to have a really clear outline when I was in the rage, and a trust. I could just tell myself, even though it didn't seem like it was possible at all, that there were some beautiful needs underneath, and if I could get there, I would be feeling a whole different set of emotions.
Right.
And sure enough, you know, after a couple hours, just being able to transform them into this place where I had this great conversation that evening with the person that I had shit upon the whole time during my anger. And it was a really interesting experience, because I don't often go to that place as much. But without having that absolute certainty that there's a way that I can break through this and I'm going to stick with it until I do, it would be really hard to get out of it. So
right.
I was so grateful once again for this incredible gift of NBC in my life. It's because it allows me to go to other places that I wouldn't have gone to before.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down. That's an important piece of information to tuck somewhere that it's noticeable all the time. It's kind of tucked away in a little post-it inside my brain. Just that absolute certainty that you have skills, that you have something that will help you through, even while you're having that enraged response, that underlying knowledge that
mm-hmm.
you can separate from that.
Once I realized this is the best process I know, and if another one comes up, that's great. But at this moment in time, this is the best one I know, so I'm going to stick with it and see it through. It's been really helpful for me.
This is Mary Kay. I really appreciated this conversation, and I enjoyed what you said, Kathleen, about not getting angry very often. And the thing that struck me was the title of your workshop, Making Friends with Anger. I love that, because what I have discovered, I actually kind of look forward to times that I get angry now. Because I have found out that when I get angry, there's some incredibly valuable information in that.
Indeed.
And that's what this process is like, mining, going mining to find out what these needs might be or what these shoulds are that I have in my head. Because that's usually what I find is behind it. When you mentioned, you know, I got angry and I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait till the next workshop. Every time I get mad now, it's like, now I have to write this down and remember this, because this is a really good example for the next workshop.
I love the simplicity, too. As you said, there's something that is so precious to me in my life. And when I finally get, for me, it came down to authenticity, how much I was so ready to move into the work that I want to do in the world, that, you know, my purpose. And I just really would have loved that to be seen and valued. It's just this incredible thing that I'm moving into authenticity in a way that I haven't before.
Well, that's another thing. I stopped being afraid of anger. I grew up in a time when nice little girls didn't get angry.
Yeah.
And I think it was a long time before I even could feel when I was angry. I considered that a real gift.
Mm-hmm.
And now to find out how much real good information, it's odd to say, but it is something I look forward to. And again, holding the certainty that there is a way to change.
I appreciate that. I too, grew up without anger being expressed, and so it was a terrifying thing. And now I can actually look forward to other people's anger. I don't enjoy my own as much. but other people's is more fun to deal with. You know, the anger just seems like such a great example of how our thoughts creating that worldview, they're the container that we hold for the worldview, the vehicle for learning and understanding. So I really want to make sure that my thoughts are in service of life, that they are congruent with the values that I hold. And I want to make sure I'm not talking about static beliefs, but, you know, thoughts that will allow me to really question and explore the world honestly, or I want to be able to use my thinking and my mind in that way. Because I value the human ability that we have for creativity and problem solving and research and analysis and understanding. I really value that. I grew up paying a lot of attention to that. So I love my brain, and it's helpful to know that it gives me a partial view of the world. I just want to be aware that my thoughts are only one part of the resource that's available to me. I'm curious what you think the role that the thoughts play in our life. If you're just kind of brainstorming and exploring, what roles do we have for them?
What roles do we have
what,
for our thoughts?
What roles, if we're thinking, thinking about thoughts, I guess it's as a filter how we view the world, but I want to make sure that I hold thinking in high esteem as well. It's very helpful for me with problem solving and understanding things. And I just want to open that up a little bit in terms of all of the valuable aspects of thinking and thoughts that we enjoy.
I think for me is to help organize my meaning. What is meaningful? What I value? They're a crucial part of my understanding of how the world works and how I want it to work.
I really like that. That's kind of what I was going to say. Thoughts can help us organize and kind of make sense of our experience. But also, I think they can help us ask the questions. That's a really powerful thing there. But what are we curious about? What are we exploring? And so ask the questions. And I've been thinking about this idea of discernment, observation, feeling, needs. That's one level. The process of discernment, of actually differentiating those things, of actually putting them in their little pigeonholes and being aware of them as individual components. I think that's of real value also.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like Mary Kay's idea of organizing your thought, organizing information, organizing your experience,
mm-hmm.
and discerning so that we can have a new awareness.
I really enjoy both of those. I resonate deeply. I rely on my thinking so much for those subtle differences that can really shift my perception and meaning. What is meaningful? And this morning I was working with somebody about branding my business and website development. She talked about hard sell or soft sell, and I said, you know, that sell doesn't resonate, but what I'm really wanting to do is offer something and, you know, make it available. And I said, does the offer feel different to you than sell? And she said, yes, completely different. And my thoughts are what allowed me to do those little subtle shifts in meaning, that, but it makes all the difference to me in the world. I really appreciate that. In the book Presence that I've talked about, Peter Senge and Joseph Jaworski, they talk at the beginning about being able to suspend our assumptions and our preconceived notions and being able to see differently, which I equate so much with the observation versus evaluation piece. That's so critical. And if we want to really have our thoughts support life, then there's a piece at the beginning that seems important, the observation versus evaluation, but there's something much deeper to me behind it, is the suspension of assumption and the suspension, allowing a certain kind of disbelief in the way I viewed the world and opening up to other possibilities. It's almost as if I'm taking my thoughts out of this little prison that I've created, this box that I put them in, and letting them really have the full range of all the great human excellence that they're capable of, simply by suspending my preconceptions and allowing the thoughts to go in that direction. And then I'm guessing that I've opened it up to a greater possibility of allowing them to serve life and probably, I don't have any scientific data here, but I'm guessing that when I do open them up, I'm allowing my intelligence and my thinking and my thoughts to gather information on much deeper levels than I allowed it to before when I really held it tightly in this framework that I had grown up with. And I'm wondering if that resonates with any of your experiences or triggers any other thoughts for you.
What you said just created so much space. And it really opened up a whole new appreciation of thought. I think when we start thinking in VC, we put a lot of emphasis on the value of our emotions and how our emotions signal our underlying needs. And, of course, those are of tremendous value. But all of a sudden, thoughts, you've given them power.
Oh, yay! I don't like how NVC is sometimes interpreted as thoughts aren't good. We have to get away from them and go into it. And I really love my brain and thinking and value all of the ways the people on the planet can do that.
Yeah.
I want to keep it all as part of the whole and open up the possibilities and put it particularly powerful when they're used in conjunction with all the other means I have of knowing and creating meaning and acting and speaking in my life.
One of the things that popped into my mind when you were talking, Kathleen, is I think of it as taking my thoughts less seriously. It's not that I don't have them, but I'm no longer quite so sure that that's the way things are.
Yeah, I like that. You're allowing them to maybe hold part of the picture and allowing new input to shift and change them if it calls for that.
Well, and the truth of the matter is that, you know, when I was 18, I knew everything. It's been all downhill since then.
Right
now, if you ask
too.
Me what I know, I can name maybe one thing.
I didn't know it all until I was 21.
You were 20. Well,
I was 21 18. When I knew it all.
I was pretty good at 18, I'll tell you. So, you know, it's one of those things. I can separate myself from my thoughts and recognize them for what they are. And know, I mean, pretty much know for a fact that I don't know that they're, you know, the true, the good, and the beautiful.
And thoughts like feelings for me still lead us down a path of something deeper. If my intention is really to connect with life through an unmediated experience, you know, that place of life that we call needs, and I want something that's, I don't edit first. I just want to be connected to life. Then thoughts, again, are something along that pathway for me. But I don't want to think that they're the destination. Same with feelings. And it's all part of the experience, and I want to honor that. But just allow myself to open to greater depth. Because I've spent a lot of my life in my head. And I remember a workshop with Walter Wink once, and he said he used to be a Christian from the neck on up. I thought that was such a great... And he said until he met his wife, who's a dancer. And, you know, and now he could be a Christian in his whole body. That was just his way of putting it. And I love that analogy of, yes, I really understood that living just from the neck on up in whatever experience and mode I was in. It was often through my stories and my analysis. One exercise that I love to do is looking at the places where we do hold ourselves hostage and prisoner. What beliefs have we really locked in that don't allow us to explore and be open and suspend our disbelief there? Digging through all those jackal thoughts or any thoughts that we have to come to the core beliefs that we hold. And the reason I value this so much is that I find that when I'm triggered over and over again and then I do the empathy work to transform it and then find myself back in the same place again, I wonder if it's because there are some deeper beliefs that I'm not touching with my empathy. And so I just keep getting triggered and going back and triggered again. And so I want to bring those beliefs into the light. So find out really who's running the show and what's been motivating me. I'm grateful to Robert Gonzalez for introducing me to this idea and sharing this process with me. I want to acknowledge that the process I'm going to do is really based on his. and especially good for those really stubborn jackals. I've added my own work to it as well, so it's a convoluted thing. So if you see Robert and say you learned his process, he'll ask you, where did you find this mess? It's based on his work, but a different structure. So here's the exercise. So there's six different steps in my process. And the first one is easy. It's just to identify the observation or the stimulus that you're reacting to. So nothing else, but what's the thing that somebody said or somebody did, or what's the thing that you said or did, or what's the thought that you're remembering that has triggered you in some way? The second step is to write down all your thoughts. You know, what are you telling yourself in relation to the stimulus? And stick to thoughts as long as you can instead of translating them right away. This exercise is about really sticking with the thoughts and seeing what belief might be underlying those thoughts. I created this using a combination of stuff simply because my jackals were so nice, because I too grew up in that good girls are always nice. And my jackals are also really smart. They know that if they make a big scene, they're going to get a lot of attention and I'll kick them out. So mine are really hard to get to. So I had to stick with them as long as I could. So follow the thoughts to something that you might call a core jackal belief, something that shaped your reactions for a long time. And here's how you can follow your thoughts through the different layers. You can simply come with your stimulus and your thought that follows it. You can ask, if this thought were true, then what would it mean to me? And then another thought will come. And if that were true, what would that mean to me? And another thought would come. And you ask the same question, or you can ask the question, what if I assumed or decided that would lead me to think this? Well, I've assumed such and such. Okay, then what have you assumed or decided from that that would lead you? Or another question you can ask yourself to keep following the thoughts down the line is, that's important to me because. And that's important to me because. And that's important to me because. But those are different ways, the questions you can ask yourself to keep yourself in the thinking mode and to start filtering through it. So the second step is simply, and we'll go through an example of this, so second step is simply to follow your thoughts. The third step is when you think that you're really at your core belief, and for some people it's, I'm really a detriment to the world. I'm really no good, or I'm not good enough. And the third step is when you think this belief of I'm not good enough, then what are you feeling? And this is the point where you start the translation process. And really, sit with the feelings. Well, oh man, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling nervous, I'm feeling angry, whatever it happens to be. And the fourth step is, what needs do you perceive are not being met? And the third and fourth step, take as much time as you need to really fully mourn whatever that core belief generates for you, with feelings of sadness or scarcity or worry or panic or whatever it is, and the needs that you think are not being met through that. I'm not living fully in the world in the way I want to be, and how sad, how much that hurts not to be doing that. And until the morning really starts to settle and you really feel connected with that. And then at that point, move on to the fifth step, which is to really sink into the value of those needs, the value that they hold for you, the beauty of them. And just think, wow, when I'm really centered in my power, for example, if that's my need, is to really be centered in my power, then I really value that. I value coming from that place of worth. I value coming from that place of being able to contribute to the world, of making decisions that seem to make a difference to people. And just notice how much beauty there is in that dream that you hold. This is the dream section where you can see how much you cherish it. And this is sitting with the beauty of the needs, as Robert calls it. And then notice how you feel at that point when you're really connected to the things that you most value. And then the sixth step is, as you look at that core jackal belief, maybe that I'm not good enough, see if it seems to enhance your life now that you're connected with the dream that you hold. And ask yourself if you want to keep that core belief, if it's really serving you, or if you want to shift it to something else that might be more true for you. It doesn't have to be trading one for another, but if it's not feeding you and serving you in the way you want, then is there a way that you can stay connected to the energy of your dream. And just make a request of yourself in relation to that. So that's an outline of the process. I'll put it into an example for you, one that I used in other telephone classes. It's an example that works pretty well for me. So here's how it would look. So the first step is my observation. So I asked for 3 responses to a reading and remembering that I did. No one responds for 30 seconds. That's just the observation. So the second step is writing down my thoughts. So I'm telling myself, no one liked it. That was a really poor choice. No one connected with that one, obviously. You just took up too much time with something that was not helpful at all. Those are some of the thoughts going through my head. So I want to follow those thoughts now. I'll take the thought, that was a really poor choice. No one connected with that. Now I'll ask myself, if that were true, what would it mean? Well, then it would mean that I'm not very skillful. Okay, Kathleen, let's assume that that were true. What would that mean to you? Well, it would mean then that people won't be very interested in me. Well, let's assume that's true. What would it mean? It means I won't be accepted. Let's assume that's true. You're not accepted. What would that mean to you? It would mean that I wouldn't be included in community with others that share my deepest values. And see how I've gone from the thoughts of, well, no one liked it, that was a poor choice, to being connected to this feeling that is much more intense for me. That, well, I won't be accepted, I won't be included in a community that shares my deepest dreams. And a core belief that comes out of that is that I really need to prove my worth in order to be valued in community. I need to prove that I'm skillful in some way. And so I'm operating from a core belief that I need to prove my worth, to be accepted, to be valued. So I'm going to move on to the third step at that time, because I'm pretty connected to something that though I'm not on a conscious level acting from, on an unconscious level, I was acting from this place I have to prove my worth all the time. So the third step is when I tell myself that I need to prove my worth, how am I feeling? Well, I feel really scared. I also feel exhausted. I put a lot of energy into that, and I'm feeling really discouraged. I don't know how long I could keep it up. I want to be valued just for who I am without having to put so much energy there. And the fourth step is what needs do I perceive that aren't being met? Well, there's a whole list here. I'm not sensing that my needs for relaxation and joy are being met. Certainly not my need for authenticity if I'm trying to prove myself in other people's eyes. I'm not sensing a need for maybe equality that's being met, a sense that we all matter. I feel really sad to think I've spent so much of my energy for so many years trying to prove my worth rather than having a clear connection to my non-negotiable worth. I'm sad that I've not valued and trusted all the things that I bring to this world as much as I valued other people's perceptions of what I did or did not offer. And if I sit with that and just do the mourning that it takes and what that feels like to have that awareness now, the exhaustion and the fear and the discouragement of having put so much of my energy there, I would sit at that point and mourn that for a while. And then the fifth step is to sink into what those values mean for you when they are met. So I'm realizing how much I want all of us to really be connected to our non-negotiable worth. And how I'm guessing that we would have so much more energy to create the world that we did want. I would have much more energy to create the world that I do want if I'm connected to my non-negotiable worth. Guessing I'd be more joyful and authentic, and not act in the tragic ways to get my needs met. So when I imagine being in touch with my own beauty and trusting that that beauty can be seen by others and that it can be valued by other people, then I start feeling relaxed and grateful. Oh yeah, I'm aware now. I have a sense of awareness that I do have something to offer. And then there's a sense of joy in seeing my own worth. Now from that place, I can move to the last step of making a request to myself to really have the intention of trusting that I have worth and beauty regardless of how anybody responds, that it's their response is about them and not about me. The other request and intention I hold for myself is to assume goodwill on the part of everyone listening, and rather than my story and assumption that they're not interested, I assume goodwill, assume that their intentions are really for compassion and caring, that their intentions are just as strong as mine. So that's how the process can work for me, and I'm wondering if you have any questions or reactions at this point.
I guess one of the things that struck me was I have a very different starting point, but my ending point, the core need, was very similar to where you arrived. Concern about belonging to a community that I value.
So even though the details were very different for you, you still ended up with that core value.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually a very similar understanding that, you know, what the other party is saying is says everything about them and nothing about me. You know, it's telling me who they are. It's not telling me who I am.
Mm.
But still a lot of disappointment and concern over a connection, a certain kind of connection being made.
Yeah. It does help separate out what's my stuff and what's their stuff. And that seems to be really helpful, too. I appreciate hearing that.
I'm kind of wondering if this is a little off topic, but I'll throw it out there anyway. I've been hearing about, well, first of all, I like the way you use this to get to a core belief, because that wasn't, as an idea I've heard, a concept I've heard about, but didn't have a clear idea of what a core belief would be. In some other telecourses I've taken, we've talked about core needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what has started occurring to me is that this whole idea of universal needs and an individual's core need or a core belief, how do you decide whether a need is a universal need? And what is the criterion for a core belief?
Okay, you're asking a big technical question. I love this, though, because it's interesting we start using all of these terms, and there's no one way that we all use these terms. So I'll give you my understanding is that every need is a universal need. We all hold them, all people on all planet. And it's just we have these certain qualities in life that are important to everybody to be able to express oneself for safety in life, for power over one's life, for spiritual expression, for community and family. And that's just something that everybody holds. I use the term a core need to define something that keeps coming up for me over and over again, something that out of all of the needs, if I really only had to choose two or three, so this is simply me talking and I'm not speaking for the whole network here, but it would be something that arises for me frequently, that either gets triggered frequently, such as my need for authenticity, my need to know that I matter, belong, that if there's something really deep within me, for whatever reason, that I hold to that and find myself paying attention to quite a bit. So I would just call it a core need because it seems to have more depth and weight for me than other needs in my life in some ways. Lou has developed a really, I want to call it a wonderful curriculum simply because I really enjoy the idea behind it. There are a set of core needs which are the need to know that I matter, that I belong, that I have a place at the table, and that those are really core for everybody, she thinks. Those are really central, and a lot of this has evolved out of her work in the prisons and the Buddhist community, that we flip back and forth between, in the jhāka world, the I'm somebody, look at all these things I do and say and have or whatever, and I'm nobody. And we flip back and forth constantly between those two. And in the middle, there's this place of if I'm connected with the life, and I'm just one of the waves in the big ocean, and we're all connected, we're one body. And that's the place, the core needs that we belong and we're connected. Is that helpful at all?
Yeah, it is.
Can I clarify something?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference between a core belief and a core need?
So, thank you. When I'm talking about a core belief, it's connected with the thought that we're talking about today is there's a certain filter that I've used to understand the world, a certain belief that I'm holding. It's a certain thought. A core need is just as simply this is this life energy moving through me, and a belief is more a thought.
Okay. So what we're trying to bring to light to start with is more that belief system that we've rigidified, moving our way towards what our core need is behind that belief.
There you go. Yeah? I like the way you said that.
Okay. I don't know what I just said, but...
Well, that this particular exercise is really trying to get to the core thoughts, the belief system that we've rigidified, I think is what you said.
Right.
That we've made really rigid. And another way of thinking is, what are your core jackal thoughts you're holding? So an example of a core belief would be to see the world through scarcity. I think there's not enough to go around. Or another core belief would be there's abundance. There's plenty to go around.
Right.
And you can imagine, depending on which filter you're using, the same situation would look completely different. And so it's a way of becoming acquainted with the filters that you're using, the thinking that you're processing things through. Because my thinking and my perception of whether my needs are being met affects the way I feel and my responses toward that.
So, Kathleen, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I got down to my core thought. It really was a core belief. And I decided this was a core belief I wanted to keep, that it was, in fact, in line with my values.
Great.
This is a good NVC example here. The trigger statement was actually when I read in the 20-some pages for people who are considering certification that there was an agreement with the Giraffe Project that we would not use the giraffe in any advertising or photographs or anything like this. When I read that, you know, I thought, well, this doesn't meet my needs. My thinking, and these were the actual thoughts at the beginning, both for the story and the other thing that I wrote down, every time I see a giraffe in an advertisement, I feel resentful. This was my beginning statement. Toys R Us has a giraffe in their advertisement, and Disney has giraffes in his advertisement, and so on and so forth, the local zoo. And then I thought, well, Disney copyrighted Mickey and Minnie, but he didn't copyright all mice, and so on and so forth. So I'm getting into this whole line of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And this was where I kind of got stuck. And I thought, and actually at one point it got down to, now I know how the Native Americans felt when we came along and said that, you know, we would own the land. And this whole question of ownership and boundaries and appropriate boundaries
mm-hmm.
came up for me. I went through that and I thought, well, my feeling that I don't matter because I've been asked.
Wait, I want to hear the core belief first before you move there.
Well, so
the core belief.
Yeah, when I went down through all of this, none of those typical core beliefs mattered. And I thought the core belief actually had to do with, I don't believe in owning the earth, in owning
mm-hmm.
the giraffes, you know, and then I had to ask myself, well, we own our own home, you know, and a certain little spot of property. So then it brought up the issue of boundaries and what I considered an appropriate boundary. And I thought, you know, I think it's okay to have your house, and I think it's okay for Toys R Us to have their giraffe, which has a name and a certain image, you know, and all of that. And I thought, oh, you know, what I think is okay here, my belief is, you may have a giraffe, but you can't have all the giraffes. And you may have a house, but you can't have all the house. And I haven't gotten to the bottom of this yet. You know, as I said, I had trouble with this.
So a core belief might, I like the first one that came up, is that we don't own the earth, that the earth is
we
shared.
We don't own the earth. And that it's shared, but that... there's a second part to it, which is we have a right to set boundaries. I mean, you have a right to your Mickey Mouse, whatever it is, you know, or your Mickey giraffe.
Yeah, so I want to translate boundaries in that a little bit because we're getting so close. So the core belief would be the earth is not owned, that it's something that's shared. And within that sharing, there's room and a place for personal expression and care for a certain piece, stewardship of a certain piece of it.
Right, right.
Is that close?
That's very close. Then when I went back, and I keep going over the steps several times, so why is this a trigger for me? You know, I don't really care all that much about the giraffe. But I thought it's a trigger for me because I was enjoying using the giraffe. I actually had pictures taken with the puppets. And before I reread this, you know, I read it a long time ago, and then I had pictures taken when someone asked for a picture, and then I read this, and then I thought, well, you know, I just won't use the pictures. But I thought there was a feeling of mutuality. I felt that my need for mutuality wasn't met here. I thought it's disappointment, you know, disappointment. This is a group that I look to for all kinds of support. And lack of understanding, you know, there were lots of other things there too. But it was like, well, why did you give away the giraffe? A lot of things came up. I was really
a lot of need for choice and expression.
Yeah, choice and fun, you know, just fun and understanding. There was this strong feeling, I think the strongest feeling was this, you don't own the earth. And you don't cooperate in this sort of behavior.
That there's a certain value and paradigm that you value our interdependence on the earth, and that will include expressing things in similar ways, and you want to have room for that, people's choice and freedom around that, maybe.
Yeah.
So you were you able to sit with then that how much you cherish that sense of freedom and authenticity and people's choice and the beauty that you see in that and what it can bring to the world and bring to your life?
Yes, and actually to try and figure out why the NVC group might have agreed to.
So that would be the request piece then that would come up for you.
And what sort of needs they were trying to meet. But, you know, each time I would get into those, I'd bring up a whole new layer. So a lot of disappointment that I don't know anything about the Giraffe Project. But disappointment that a group would even ask for such a thing. And ease, you know, wanting it to be easy.
I hear lots and lots of requests in what you're saying. Maybe request yourself for more understanding of the process. Did that other group ask for that, or is this something that NVC has offered them? A request to find out more about the Giraffe Project. It's from the state of Washington, from an island north of here. Maybe request to find out who to speak with in the network, or request to start a dialogue around this. Or I can hear a lot of requests that are potential ones coming up.
Yeah, there could be a lot of them. I haven't decided if I'm really willing to put that much effort into it, but the actual request that I wrote down was, I will use this for my assignment, and I will bring it up in this class because it's a good example.
Yeah, and I love that request. You said it wasn't a request, but it is. Is a request to consider whether it's worth the energy or not. Is this the place where I want to spend my energy? That's a request to yourself to make a choice about that. That one's huge. I love that request.
That's
great. I could, do you want to hear reactions from Ankit or Kathy?
Sure.
So I didn't catch all of it, but I did get the part that we don't own the earth and we don't own the giraffe and that was a core belief that you wanted to hold on to, that through your inquiry, that was one you wanted to keep.
You know, I really liked the way it worked its way down into a variety of concrete actions. And I also really liked, right at the end, Kathleen's pointing out that consideration, do I really want to take the energy to follow up on any of these requests? That was quite freeing in and of itself right there. It was, in fact, a really good example. It'll be worthwhile thinking about it in some depth.
Yeah, I appreciate that example, too. It's not clear-cut. So often, right, in my world, it's not clear-cut when I get down. There are several layers, and I love that idea. But then I kept flipping back over here, and I'd start the process all over again. And then I went over here and started the process all over again.
I recently did a similar exercise, although it didn't go as deep. It wasn't NVC-based, but somebody had introduced me to the concept of finding a core belief through Byron Katie's work, which I had been unfamiliar with. But The one that I was able to identify was the sort of core belief, like I believe that there should be mutuality in relationships, and that's where this difficulty with the friend is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, there's the part of me that says, well, that's a valid belief to have, and of course there should be mutuality and give and take. But then also the recognition that that belief is stifling what's really happening, and that even though that core belief seems right and seems acceptable, it's actually doing damage. And so I guess my question is then taking that belief and then I guess applying these other, like identifying the belief with Byron Katie's work, it was who would you be without that belief?
Mm-hmm.
Was such a relief. You know, I would have thought intellectually that I would have panicked at giving it away. But instead it was such a huge relief.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that then taking these steps 2 through 6 would really, really be beneficial at working through that issue of, but it makes sense to have it, but it's killing what's alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kelly, a couple of things come up around that. I really appreciate you bringing this up. Is one, I don't want this to be interpreted as we're trying to create a new set of beliefs that we do like.
Right.
Because really, the intention is just to have that unmediated experience with life. And so the intention of this exercise is to simply be really aware of when our thoughts are serving life and when they're really disconnecting us from life.
Right.
It's just the awareness of that so that we can be more fully alive and connected. I really don't want to change one set of beliefs for another. You know, either one that you hold may be in and of itself a way to disconnect from that life energy flowing through me.
Yeah, I don't even know I'm trying to find a different belief, just so much
mm-hmm.
as the word that I used before about rigidifying thoughts into some mm-hmm. core way of seeing the world, that if I could even just loosen up the ties on it.
Yes, to suspend that for a while and see what happens.
Exactly.
And also paying attention to the language, going back to last week, you know, the Amtssprache, anytime we have the word should, those are the toxic thoughts and the language that disconnects us. So even the language that there should be mutuality in relationships, that language feels really different to me. The energy of that is really different than me sitting with how much I value mutuality when I experience it. So I can still hold and really treasure that energy of mutuality and it being in the world, and that's an incredible thing. And as soon as I put the should attached to it, then I've got that toxic weight that drowns the whole thing to the bottom of the sea on it, that it then becomes stifled, to use the word that you did. So when I want to sit with the I value mutuality, and when that's there, how different it feels for me. There's a sense of ease. I don't have to work so hard. There's a sense of flow. There's a sense of connection I really enjoy. You know, all of that is a different experience than there should be. And then it gets really tense and demanding. The demand energy comes forth at that point in time rather than the celebration of life. And then the question you can always keep is, well, if it's not there, that, you know, if I'm not experiencing it the way I like, then where do I want to be investing my energy? And it could be that I'm really happy to still invest my energy there and letting go of the thought that it should be any different than it is. Or it may not be a place where you see that life is being served and you may choose to put your energy somewhere else.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's helpful. Thank you.
Did anything else come up for people around this particular exercise? I would love to hear from you on the checkout, because this is our third. We've gone through 3 of the 5 different elements. We've gone through consciousness and through language and thinking. They're so vast and they're so huge in and of themselves. And I'm just wondering if on the checkout, if you can step back a little bit and look over the last 3 sessions and get some perspective of where you are now in your understanding and your relationship to NBC or yourself, versus where you were 3 weeks ago. And I would love some general feedback in terms of what's been helpful for you and what hasn't been. And if you have any suggestions on ways to make the information even more clear, that would be great.
This is Mary Kay. You know, Kathleen, one of the things that has been so valuable for me has been actually kind of struggling with these exercises. You know, the one that we did for this week, we also did in the joy class.
Right.
And when I did it in that class, just the particular topic that I chose worked very easily, and it was just a textbook case, you know, and it was very simple to do. But both the one you had last week, you know, you gave us the storytelling one for last week, and this one, just because of the particular issues I chose, they were far more challenging. And I think I probably really learned a lot from the whole process of trying to figure out, you know, where I was stuck and maybe why I was stuck, and then having your help resolving it and looking at it a little differently was also really helpful. I don't know that I have any ideas for making it simpler, but it's really worked for me that it hasn't been entirely simple. I think that's been very helpful, actually. Mm-hmm. It's made me think about a lot of new things.
So as long as you had the support to take it to a place and not get stuck and frustrated, then you're comfortable with the way it is.
Right, right.
Okay.
This is Kathy, and I really agree with what Mary Kay was saying. Personally, I would, I don't know what the right word would be, a little suspicious of making it easier, a little bit. I'm not sure that deep transformation and shifting paradigm should be easy.
But I want it to be.
I'm not sure in the end if a real change would have happened. I don't know. Deepak Chopra does say, just change your mind. It can happen in a moment. So for me, each week has brought something particularly core for me. The first week was that concept of interdependence and connectedness, and seeing it in a different way than I had understood that before. And then in the second week was an awareness that in myself I really needed to get out of my head and expand myself to include, what do I think the other person's needs are in this situation, in this moment? Not just identifying mine and trying so hard to communicate properly, but slowing down and softening and trying to understand the other parties involved. And then today, recognizing that because of that recognition of interdependence and because of that expansion to include others, I'm already making choices differently.
Wow.
So for me, it's very linear. I guess I'm very mental. It's working in a very linear way.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And I truly do actually appreciate the depth of the exercises. As Mary Kay was saying, I really wouldn't want them to be too simple. I think if they were too simple, I would stay in my head. I think these actually require me to get out of my head to do them.
Great. Thank you.
I think this has been probably at the point I'm at with exploring in VC, this class is a perfect fit. I'm so pleased that you're exploring in VC in terms of it being a perspective and in terms of how we perceive our world and then respond to it rather than the formula, making the distinction between the model and these premises. And I started thinking of it in terms of a set of premises that we can work from in terms of our perceptions of the world. So this has been tremendously valuable. So again, you know, just the first week, just opening up to that idea of it, even the term NVC consciousness can get to be a cliche. We want to come from an NVC consciousness. What is that? You know, and it sounds really woo-woo. So I like the fact that we're really exploring this in terms of what does that mean? And what are the premises that we might like to work from, that NVC offers us a chance to work from? Mm-hmm. And then exploring how the language that we are familiar with doesn't support the premises as it might do. And today, how we can, just becoming aware of our thoughts and how they relate to our beliefs, how we can shift them, how we can choose, being more aware of our thoughts also contributes to our choice. So it's all been tremendously valuable and just at the right time for
me. Great. Oh, I like that. I'm going to have to add that in, that when we are more aware of our thoughts, it makes us more powerful in our choice.
Yeah. I just appreciated that very much today.
Well, I'm really appreciating the three of you, your deep insights and ability to feed things back to me so much, and the examples that you bring and the sharing that you do has really made this rich for me, and I'm excited to develop it more.